The password to access the midterm I will give out at the end of class. I said it, now I have to do it, right? I don't want to be a liar. Do we have any pressing questions that people want to have before the midterm becomes available? You said, I view exams as a learning opportunity, so I still will be willing to answer questions on core theory in the class during the midterm exam. It's going to be a busy week, so it may be hard to find me. You may have to email me and set up time. But I will not answer questions about the problems themselves, saying, is this correct? Or how do I do part C? I won't be answering those types of things. If you say, hey, in state plane analysis, we have this kind of a situation, generally speaking, how would I go about addressing that? Depending how close it is to the actual problem, we'll still be able to discuss those things. Okay. Midterm is three problems. There is no significant sinusoidal analysis because we've only had the one homework problem on that. It's going to be heavily focused on switching loss, nonlinear capacitance, state plane analysis, those types of things. It's going to be topologies and operating schemes that you haven't seen before, but for which all the fundamental theory that we've worked on still applies. Okay, well, good luck. It'll be due Friday at the start of class, this Friday. We have this week to work on it. Says it in there, but as a reminder, you're not allowed to discuss with each other. You're not allowed to use any resources other than the course resources. So no going out and posting on a message board, asking what the solution to this problem might be. No asking students who aren't in the class. You can use anything on the course website, otherwise, within reason, no internet resources. I don't care if you use an online calculator or table of trig identities or something, but don't go out searching for solutions to these problems. Okay, tiny box challenge, I got boards and parts ordered. I think based on when I got files from the last group, that order probably didn't get processed until Thursday. So we'll be looking at four work days from Thursday, but Tuesday plus shipping at the end of this week, we should have those boards back. By the time the midterm's finished, hopefully we can give out boards and start working on populating and testing. All right, if other questions, we'll hop back in. What we were talking about last Wednesday, we had this ideal of switching waveforms we'd like to get out of a high frequency converter for minimum loss. I want to review this again because we'll hopefully get to this later in lecture. But some goals here, we wanted trapezoidal shapes to limit peak stresses, and we wanted very low slopes at the switching instance so we could minimize overlap type losses. And that's what we're shooting for. And we like that for all semiconductor devices. But in mind, we started looking at these different single resonant switch networks. We talked about how for any parent PWM converter, I can kind of reduce the two switch networks with my controls and my synchronous switch down to some network that looks like this. And based on which resonant elements I'm incorporating into the behavior of that switch network, I get one of these four different resonant switch networks. And then we went on from here and started into the multi-resonant switch. We'll get back to that today. There's one point I wanted to go back to on this and just give an example of classification. May come up in homeworks or exams later. So if I have these four resonant switch networks and I, on a homework problem, give you some weird looking converter with some extra resonant elements, you can reduce that converter down to the high frequency network and then compare switch networks to these four to figure out what is the dominant operation of that switch network. What am I going for? Am I going to be quasi-resonant or quasi-square waves, DCS or ZVS? Okay. And you now have resources on all of these. So we did ZVS, quasi-square wave, and quasi-resonant in class. VCS, quasi-resonant, quasi-square wave, are covered in the book in some detail. Like I mentioned, all the equations we get out of state plane analysis, even though the book doesn't ever talk about state plane analysis, but they give the results in that form. So with my resonant switch network, going back to this idea of I've got some parent PWM converter. And I can look at the switch cell independently of that parent, and then based on where I incorporate high frequency reactive elements, figure out what the switch network is, and then combining it back into the parent network, figure out what the behavior of the converter is. In this case, I've got a buck, and I've got a hard switching network. Okay. L is still a big filter element, and I'm not incorporating any capacitances into it. So here I just want to do a couple examples of how I would identify the behavior of a switch network and a couple converters. These are textbook problems 20.2 and 20.1. And there's some additional subparts, but in both, subpart A is identify ZVS, ZCS, quasi-resonant, quasi-square wave. Okay. So without even going into identifying a switch network, you can probably just look at these and tell, okay, parent PWM topology is a flyback and a forward converter. If I really wasn't sure, I could go through and say, take all of the resonant elements and delete them and see what I'm left with. I get a flyback and a forward converter. Okay. So here, the forward, these two are filter elements, LF and CF. And then everything else is resonant, small values that will have some sort of significant change in state during a switching period, whereas these small ripple will apply. In the flyback, just CF is the filter element. And that's, if you went and looked at these textbook problems, they tell you that, okay, this magnetizing inductance is small in value in the flyback, so it's going to participate. Okay. So if I wanted to figure out which sort of resonant switch these are, what I'd do is I'd look back at this high-frequency switch network. So I'd assume all of my DC sources and filter elements, I can neglect the ripple, so my CF becomes a short, my VG becomes a short, well, negligible dynamics up close to the switching frequency. And then look at what's left. These are both isolated topologies, so I'm going to reflect things back through the transformer. So for my flyback here on the left, what I'll end up with is my Q and its anti-parallel diode and a capacitance CP. Then I'll have my called LMP here. And that's going to short back down as I short out the input source. And then to reflect all this back through, I'm going to flip it and scale everything by the turns ratio. I'm going to end up with a capacitance of N squared times CWS. And then my diode will be connected here. And it'll have its parallel capacitance CS before. That's going to become N squared CWS. It'll short back through as I short out this alpha filter element. Thing looks a little bit complicated, but if I note that I call this ground because it's shorted together, this is also ground, and I really have effectively everything in parallel. All these four elements go between this node and ground. These three go between this node and ground. So if I redraw this, it'll look like, oops, need for Excel, my switch and its anti-parallel diode was Q and DP on this schematic. Then I'm going to have some parallel capacitance. This thing is all three of these in parallel. Oops. Label this one wrong. This was CS on the original schematic. And then my inductor. And then my diode here. So what I've got, my active switch is a current bidirectional two-quadrant switch, just a FET and its body diodes. Then rel is an element, both L and C in parallel here. And then my synchronous switch, my diode. So from my previous schematics, this would look like Q, L, C, and D. If I look back at my table here, that looks like this thing. What I've got is my ZVS quasi square wave flyback. Okay, over here on the right, if I do the same thing with this forward converter, I end up with, I'm going to short this out, and open that element, which is just going to disconnect my output filter and load from everything, and then I'll reflect this two diode LC circuit back through. What I end up with is LP going through my transformer. I'll get LS over N squared, diode, C, I can't even read my schematic, R times N squared, comes back through the transformer, and Q. Initially, this may look like I have too many switches, but everything over here is in series. What I'm going to do is just push this FET around to be next to the diode. And if I do that, what I end up with for a network is some inductor, LP, plus LS over N squared. And my diode that diode cap. This thing is now a current bidirectional, or excuse me, voltage bidirectional. Two quadrant switch, and that's this series diode and FET is my active switch element. So if I drew this thing, I'd have Q, my active switch is those two in series. I have an inductance in series with that, and then my diode has a cap in parallel. Look back. My network here, that's this one, which is my quasi-resonant zero current switching network. So this will be my zero current switching quasi-resonant forward converter. Okay. Questions on that? Won't be on this midterm, but fair game for future homeworks and finals. I might just throw something at you and not tell you if it's zero voltage switching, zero current switching, what the waveforms look like, and expect you to be able to figure out, okay, what is the resonant switch network? What is the parent PWM converter? Combine things and get the operation of it. Yeah.
The diode switch combination that you're talking about, is that not the direction of the body diode anymore?
Mm-mm. Here?
Uh-huh.
Body diode would be the opposite direction.
Okay. And yeah, it had to be based on the panic, but something like that.
And this is, I go back to 481 type analysis in chapter 3 of the book, switch implementation. If I have a topology that needs a switch which conducts current in one direction but can block positive or negative voltage, nothing inherently does that. So I need a combination switch. One way to do it is a series diode and MOSFET, where current can obviously only go this direction because of the diode, but now I can block voltage in both directions, because normally, if I apply a negative drain to source voltage on the MOSFET, its body diode turns on, but now this diode will block that. Let's say here, this is just the body diode. Even if I put one externally, functionally, it's the same. This is a current bidirectional. I can conduct current in either direction, but I cannot block positive, negative voltage. I'll just go straight through the diode. Made this comment briefly in a previous lecture, just say it again. For the quasi-resonant switches, there's two different versions of them. What I've drawn here would be the half wave, when I have something that looks like half of a sinusoid. I can, with the exact same topology using ideal switches, have something that looks more like this, and this is called the full wave. The difference is half wave requires a MOSFET, a current bidirectional, two quadrant switch. Full wave requires something like this series diode and MOSFET, something that can block voltage in both directions. Okay. Fundamentally, analysis is the same, you just let it resonate a little bit longer. Have to be able to go negative on voltage in order to do that. Okay.
Yeah. And how do you think vision instead of a MOSFET and a diode, both MOSFET?
Mm-hmm.
And then how can you identify those two vision? Because both are used.
Well, first thing is you figure out which is the active switch, which is the synchronous switch, which one could have been a diode. If you're in a fundamental mode of operation where these are still valid, you're still having diode-like operation out of that second switch. Okay? You can replace with the MOSFET to get losses down, but you're still trying to do the same thing. You're still trying to operate it synchronously. Now, you can push these things into different operating modes when you put that second switch in by changing the timing of it from when the diode would have switched, but then kind of a lot of the utility of this falls away, because now these are kind of known solutions to how these operate, and if I start changing switch timing, now I've got something I got to start over from on the state plane, and at that point you just start over on the state plane and figure out is CVS or DCS. The nice thing about these, if you have this, whether it's a diode or a FET, but still commutating at zero current and still blocking voltage, the solution and the state plane analysis is all going to be uniform. It's going to scale by N squareds when it's the transformer isolated, and how that state plane relates to the overall conversion ratio depends on what the topology it's in is. But you're going to find your sketch of the state plane for a ZCS quasi-resonant flyback is going to look the exact same as your sketch of the state plane for a ZCS quasi-resonant buck. And as you go through and analyze the subintervals, your equation is going to come out the same. The only difference is going to be kind of that last step where I say, okay, take my state plane analysis, figure out what the conversion ratio is. that's going to be a little bit different, but all the part with all the trig and all the geometry is going to be the same. Because your high frequency network is the same. The thing that's resonating is the same. Any questions? Okay. So a bit of an aside. Then after we were talking about this, we went through, we analyzed the ZVS quasi-resonant buck using this switch network. And through, found our solution. The state plane, like I said, would be the same if this was a ZVS quasi-resonant boost or any other parent topology. Just this step here where we went to the complete conversion ratio would change based on parent PWM topology. Here, my conversion ratio is dictated by the buck, but the idea that the average of the switch node is the average of the output. With some filter elements. So this kind of expression I would expect to show up in any ZVS quasi-resonant converter. It's just this one minus part that was specific to the bucks. Look at the behavior of that. We found this ZVS quasi-resonant buck. Had some nice behaviors. We lose ZVS at low power, and one kind of issue with it was that it doesn't incorporate the diode capacitance. Another was that we have pretty high peak voltage stress. If we want to have ZVS over a wide load range, we could have six times or higher the input voltage applied across our MOSFET during this resonance. The current was nice, had fairly low stresses, a peak value of the inductor current. The voltage now takes all of our additional stresses from this resonance. Okay. Showed some simulation results. Because the problem is we didn't include this diode capacitance. If I start including that in, I get this awful ringing, and if it gets large enough, it distorts my entire operation. So I'd really like to find a way to incorporate that capacitance. And this is doable. It leads us towards this ZVS multi-resonant buck, where I include power loop inductance as well as output capacitance of both of my semiconductor devices. The problem with this is now it's a multi-resonant circuit. I don't have some nice 1L, 1C, and I have one characteristic frequency, one characteristic impedance, and I can sketch one state plane and analyze the whole thing. Instead, depending on which devices are conducting, if both Q and D are on, I get just some linear interval. Fine, that happens in every converter. But if I have just Q on, I'm resonating with the diode capacitance. If I have just D on, I'm resonating with the MOSFET capacitance. I'm going to have different state planes for each of these intervals. They have different characteristic impedances, different resonant frequencies. And finally, if I have both devices off, I get this thing, which I now have three resonant elements and need to figure out how to analyze this. Fortunately, in this case, I can break this resonance apart. It's going to essentially look like a resonating portion of the states on everything and then an integrating portion of the states on everything. Think about it, superposition. I'm going to have this IL, which is splitting between the two caps, just providing a constant rate increase in voltage as I flow a constant current through them. And then I've got this DG. It's going to be through all three of these, and they're going to resonate. So in order to analyze this, I want to break it apart and analyze the resonant change in states and the linear change in states independently. That'll let me go back to using state plane analysis. So to do that, what I'm going to do is move these caps so they're in series. I'm going to kind of alter how things are connected in series here. Suppose we look at this. The CQ and I'm going to move CD up here. And CD has this current IL across it. And what I'd like to do is combine kind of CQ and CD together. I can't simply say it's the series combination of the two because I've got this current source preventing them from being purely in series. But I can still look at the net behavior of the two of them in series. So I'm going to look at the voltage here, we'll call V total across both of these caps, and see if I can find anything that I can leverage out of that. So my V total is all VQ plus VD. And this equation will, as I'm doing my state plane analysis, help me figure out my initial condition. I'm going to have a new state plane with this V total variable. So whatever VQ and VD start at, that's what V total will start at. And then after that initial condition, I want to look at how the states change as I let this thing go, let it resonate. So to do that, I'm going to look into change in these, in this voltage. So I'm going to look at dV total dt, and that's dVQ dt plus dVD dt, the derivative of both with respect to time. And these are both voltages across capacitors, so I can say that their dV dt is equal to their current divided by their capacitance. I is equal to C dV dt, characteristic equation for capacitance. So for dQ, you can give this current a name, I'll call it IG, current coming from the VG source. So for VQ, what I'm going to have is dVQ dt is IG over CQ. And then for VD, I'm going to have IG minus IL over CD. And I'm going to combine these two terms by getting them over a common denominator. What I'm going to have to do is multiply the first term by CD over CD. I'll get CDIG over CDCQ. For the second term, I'm going to have to multiply by CQ. And then I'm going to collect my terms of IG and I separately. What that's going to look like is I'm going to have IG times CD plus CQ over CDCQ minus IL CQ over CDCQ. Okay, when I look at this, my term multiplying IG looks like a series combination of the two capacitors, right? This is IG over CD in series with CQ, what this term is. Right. Then this term is something else. What I'd like to do is manipulate this term so that it looks like IL over this capacitance. And then I'd have a circuit that looks like this, if I can make this IG over some C star minus KIL over C star, where C star proposing would be the inverse of this thing here. Okay. So if I can make this have a factor of this term, then what I'll get here is IL over that same capacitance, which would be this kind of a thing. My current will just change by this factor K. Okay. So I can do that easily. What do I need to pull out of this term in order to get this CD plus CQ over CDCQ term? So bringing down here, dV total by dt is equal to IG CD plus CQ over CDCQ minus IL, and I want this kind of thing here. And I'm going to have some factor multiplying that to make these two equal. So if I take this thing and divide out my CD plus CQ, multiply back in my CQ, if I actually do this, I'm going to get back to here, right? But I want those separated because now my circuit looks like this, where I can say this is my LR. This is a capacitance CDCQ over CD plus CQ. And this is a current CQ over CD plus CQ times IL. And now this is a resonant circuit that I can analyze using state plane analysis. Got 1L, 1C, and DC sources. Let me bring this to the next page and clear it up a little bit. So what I'm left with is this. Where this voltage is now my V total, just some derived voltage that I kind of made up to help my analysis. The current in this inductor here, I haven't changed. This is still ILR. So if I analyze this circuit using state plane analysis, what I'll get is my actual inductor current and how it progresses during this resonance. What I'll lose is the voltage on my individual caps. What I'm going to instead have is a state plane that tells me the sum of those two voltages, but nothing about what the individual voltages are. And we've done that sort of thing before when we analyzed the dual active bridge. We lost the individual voltages on the caps. We just looked at a net voltage, and that was fine because our resonant circuit was always this. But with this multi-resonant converter, I've got these other cases where my resonant circuit involves only one cap or the other. And as I analyze, I'm going to have to match boundary conditions between all of these. So if I go from neither conducting that we just looked at and then turn on the FET to figure out how that state plane for what we just analyzed matches up to the state plane for this, I need to know the initial condition of the voltage on that capacitor. So I need to back out what my individual capacitor voltages are. Okay. That make sense? So this thing we can analyze now, our naught is going to be root LR over CD CQ over CD plus CQ. And our resonance is going to look like we've got the two caps in series. something tall enough. And we'll get the inductor state, but need an additional step to get back the state on the individual capacitors. The way I'm going to do that is I'm going to look back at my original circuit by superposition, look at what happens with just the current source, what happens with just the voltage source, and relate those back to my derived voltage V total. Okay. And that'll tell me how to take V total, split it into my cap voltage for CQ and for CD. I apply superposition. One time. I'll have is two circuits that I look at. One is let me draw these in series still. LR CD CQ, V total across the two of them. When I have just the VG source on, then I will shut that source off and look at just my IL source. I'm going to flow through CD, CQ, LR. Okay. So over here on the left, whatever happens with this resonance, whatever is going on, from V total to the individual capacitor voltages, I just have an impedance divider. Right? If I say I've got V total across the two of them, I already know what V total is. From what we did in the previous slide for my state plane analysis, I can find the contribution to their individual voltages just by looking at the impedance divider. And say, for this one, VQ is going to be equal to V total times the impedance divider with capacitive impedances. The impedance is 1 over SC. It's going to look kind of the opposite of what you get with the resistive impedance divider, and this is going to instead be CD over CD plus CQ. And VD is equal to V total times CQ over CD plus CQ. And I'll call this VQ1 and VD1 because this is only part of my VQ and VD. Applying superposition, I have to look at how much voltage I get from both of the superposition circuits. Okay, so there's my contribution from the voltage source. Look at my contribution from the current source. Just going to have basically a current divider. DC, this is going to just look like the two caps, and the current is going to divide according to the ratio of the two capacitances. Okay. So I'm going to have, with how I've labeled them, this is my VQ, this is my VD. And I have my current upside down. Apologize for that. This should be going this way. Or be negative IL. So here I have just static equations because all of my change is incorporated into V total. V total I solved and it's some resonant waveform. And it has a static division between CD and CQ. Over here, this is going to look like an integrating ramp. I'm putting a DC current through some capacitors. So I am going to have some function of time here. So what I'm going to look at instead of, I have no way to know just the individual voltages, I'm going to look at the DVDTs. If I say for my diode, CD times DVDT is going to be equal to the current going through that cap. That current is going to be minus IL based on polarities, the direction I've drawn it, times the ratio of the capacitances for this current divider. And that's going to look like CD over CD plus CQ. For CQ, it's going to be generally the same thing. CQ DVQ by DT, except it's going to be positive based on the polarity of this voltage. And it's going to be CQ over CD plus CQ. Okay, I can combine these together to get my complete equation. Before I do that, note that I can eliminate CD from both sides of the top equation and CQ from both sides of the bottom equation. What I see is that the effect of this current in isolation, if I just had this current and no input voltage, I would have both of my capacitor voltages running away at the same rate in equal direction. Okay. So the voltage on my diode is going to go negative and run away. Voltage on my FET is going to go positive and run away. But the sum of those two is always going to be zero because they're moving at the same rate, which is why I was able to get this V total without worrying about this integrating ramp part. Okay. So there's zero net change in V total due to this inductor current. Okay. So differently here, if I did dV total dt just for this circuit, so comma 2, this is equal to this term dVd dt, which is minus IL times 1 over CD plus CQ, plus this term IL times 1 over CD plus CQ. Those two cancel. This is equal to 0. So the individual voltages change, but the sum of them doesn't as a result of this inductor current. Okay. But as a side note, what I want is to get my individual voltages back. So if I combine these two things together, what I'm going to get is that my total voltage on the FET, VQ, is this component, the total CD over CD plus CQ, plus this component, where I'm going to have a constant DVDT, it's going to be a constant ramp. I'm going to have something that looks like IL times 1 over CD plus CQ times time. I'm going to integrate up, multiply by however long I'm in this interval or how far it ramps up. Okay. Same thing for VD, the total times CQ over CD plus CQ plus IL, minus between the two of these, along with my solution here, my equivalent circuit, I now have everything I need to analyze this using tools that we already have. So So I can analyze this complete ZVS multi-resonant buck. It's going to be a pain in terms of tracking my normalization. I'm going to have to normalize differently for each sub-interval, do the state plan analysis, solve it, then combine my equations, bringing them all to a common normalization to get my net behavior. The actual math involved, the actual analysis, no different than anything we've done so far. Just a bit more of a headache in terms of making sure you divide by the right I-base and then multiply by the right I-base to get back to time, matching all these conditions up. Okay. So I want to show a little bit about if you go through that process, do all this, what do you get on the behavior of this converter, CBS multi-resonant buck. These are figures taken from the PhD thesis of Dragan Maksimovich, one of the authors of the Power Book. Originally solved through a lot of this in terms of automating solutions to PWM and multi-resonant or quasi-resonant converters. So here he's showing the M versus what he called delta, what we call J, normalized output current. So the output characteristic of this ZVS multi-resonant buck for different values of F going above and below resonance. These dotted lines are the ZVS bounds. And within here, is ZVS for all devices. It's a diode, we switch to ZVS, which can help with reverse recovery if it's there, or we can replace that with a FET, and that synchronous FET will also obtain zero voltage switching. And an interesting thing, it's a buck type topology, so M goes up to one. If we're looking at this in a buck, we can only step down voltages, but for some middle range here, I can have ZVS for all loads from zero output current up to some maximum output current. And based on my selection of L and C, I can say, okay, J is equal to 2.5 corresponds to 1 amp or 50 amps, right? Because this is my normalized output current. So how I select R naught will dictate what the actual current is there. I can make this go over a wide load range while maintaining ZVS on everything. Okay. Down here below, another advantage. This is this multi-resonant converter. This is quasi-resonant buck that we just looked at previously. And this plot is comparing output power to peak voltage stress. On switch Q is I've actually significantly reduced the voltage stress on my transistor, which was one of my biggest issues with the quasi-resonant buck. It's a good thing. The drawback, if I start looking at waveforms here. This is my IR, my resonant current. It no longer has this nice flat holding at IL and then dipping below. My current stresses are now going to be higher than IL. I've increased my current stresses to save some voltage stresses. And then here, showing some waveforms in different operating modes. This thesis identified three different operating modes depending on how, what order I traverse these four subcircuits I talked about. Both switches on, Q on, D on, nothing on. Depending on how I drive the FET, I could have both switches on, then just FET, then nothing, then diode, or both switches on, then just diode, then nothing, then FET. Different combinations of those states leads to different operating modes. with many similarities, but fundamentally different solutions mathematically. Three here, if I start adding in a second set, as was asked earlier, I can have four more different possible operating modes, comes a bit of a mess. These over here are valid for operating modes one and two. Questions on that? Then we'll pick up here next time and move into different types of things. Anything else? Yeah, still want those solutions? Go to the chalkboard if this doesn't work. Midterms on the website under the assignment page. It's on the course calendar as well, two different links. Username, same. Student.